welcome back to another relaunch of Market Overdrive 2018. We're super excited to come back on the air and share with you guys information that's going to elevate your real estate IQ. With me, my co-host, founder of iLoan, 20-year plus veteran in the real estate industry with lending, Mr. Nick Mametti.
How you doing? It's been a long time since we've been on the show. Did you miss us?
I did not.
Look at that. Isn't that nice? Well, I guess that's all said and done with. How you been, Miss Founder of, well, you haven't founded Coldwell Banker. You're just one of the top producers at Coldwell Banker. So we're going to let you roll with that one. Miss Carla Mina of Coldwell Banker. Well, how many years has it been now?
Since what?
Since when? Since when did you start there? It's been a while.
I'm a 14-year veteran, I think. 14,
14 years 12. Of Coldwell Banker, 3 years of a big pain in my neck, but she's really good at what she does, so we'll let her slide with that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. But more importantly.
Yeah, let's move on.
Let's get to the people that are important here. We just kind of, you know, direct traffic. We bring in real professionals to actually tell us what's going on. So I'm going to start with our main guest today. I guess not a guest. He's actually a host. I just feel like you're still a guest. Why is that? Well, you didn't have a key card to come up today.
I didn't. They but were you are not to let
you
me
are
up.
A legit you are a legit bona fide host, a big celebrity around town, Mr. Mo Dodka, president, principal, main dude in charge at the Dodka Law Group.
That's right. The owner, last name,
fancy word. Yeah, that's a giveaway. Also, the owner, founder, and big cheese at Main Street Real Estate Group. And last but not least, you are freshly the newly appointed president, not vice president, not secretary, not treasurer, the president.
Yay!
Of YPN, which is a pretty big deal here in Chicago. So congratulations on that. Sorry,
thank
I missed
you,
that event, but that's a pretty good. Pretty
we had
cool
a lot of fun. Grocco and I took a photo of each other. That
you guys looked amazing.
Got a lot of hits on your Facebook.
Hashtag twinning
it went viral.
Hashtag twinning.
He was making fun of how short we are, but he's an inch taller than us.
Dude, we will do a standoff after this, and you're going to regret that.
It was the muscle. All the girls love the muscles. I love that picture. By the way, it was hot.
Yeah, you guys were flexing both your stomachs and your arms. You guys did a hell of a job.
I was sucking it in the whole time.
Oh, okay.
We look good, though.
You look good. Who's going to introduce this other guy in this
I'm going to introduce Mr. Grocco Funes, also with iLoan. One of the things that sets Grocco apart, and the reason why it's always great to have him in our studio, is the fact that he is awesome at getting back to clients, very well connected. And if you're looking to buy a property, Mr. Grocco Funes happens to have some really cool pocket listings, so hit him up if you're a realtor or a buyer.
Yeah, please hit me up. I'm happy to be back. This is the start of our new year. Market Overdrive. Thanks for all of our listeners and followers. We're going to elevate your real estate IQ here in 2018 and give you some insight to the market and how to make you a better consumer out there. So I'm glad to be here with you guys. Let's rock and roll. Let's get this one going.
Love it. So let's move on with our format. So, gentlemen, this is how it's going to roll. This time it's going to be a roundtable setup. So each one of you is going to have 5 minutes to talk about 2018 housing outlook. We have five key components that people have been asking about. What's going on with property taxes, inventory, rates, pricing, and please, 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 please explain to our consumers who is buying real estate today. Let us know a little bit about the market. Who are these, who is this demographic? So we're going to start with whomever wants to start, but I think we should definitely roll with the...
Ladies first. Grocco, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What's the question?
What is the trend with respect to who's buying today? Can you tell us a little bit about the demographics?
Well, everybody should be buying. I mean, this is a market right now where... there is a scarce in inventory, but the idea is that you want to buy at today's prices because prices are going to continue to go up. As time passes, we're looking at increases anywhere between 3 and 5%, so it's going to make it a little bit more difficult to afford home down the road the longer you wait. So if you're out there on the fence and you haven't decided, 2018 is the year. I actually have a little segment coming up later in the show as to why it's important to buy in 2018, the most important five bullet points as to why 2018 is the year to purchase. So
Mo, what's your take on the demographics of the actual consumer? What kind of insight can you give our listeners about the millennials, the baby boomers, the Gen Z?
I think for the most part, everybody is starting to buy. I think millennials obviously are getting to a point where their finances are in order and they can start buying. So you're hearing a lot of millennials turn into buyers. But listen, rental prices are getting outrageous. So you have two choices, or you have three. You can either live at home with your family, you can rent, or you can own. Living at home with your family gets really, really old really fast. Renting doesn't make any financial sense anymore. So most people are starting to buy now. And with low down payment options, most people can't afford to buy now.
I have a statement here that we got from one of our articles. It says high rents and student debt loads have made it difficult for young households to save up for a down payment. Even if they can afford the monthly mortgage, it's just really difficult for them to be able to save the down payment because of this expense. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's completely incorrect, because with down payment resources being as low as 5% conventional, even 3% conventional, but historically 5% makes sense for conventional, 3.5% for FHA, we can get credits back at closing. By the time I get somebody into their home, they've paid less money for their down payment than they've done for their security deposit, first month's rent, and second month's rent. So most people can have less money out of pocket spent on buying a house than they will actually getting into a rental. So I think that article might be wrong. I think you can put the money together and be a home purchaser now if you're actually being a renter as well.
So what do you say to the fact that, you know, prices are going up because of the lack of inventory, and then we just had this little increase in interest rates? This may drive a lot of people off the market. What would you advise that people do now?
I think property values, like Rocco said, they're going to keep going up. So whether you're buying this year or next year, historically, they go up 3-4% every year. Even if you look at like a 20-year span, it's 3-4% every single year. I think they're going to keep going up. So if you're buying next year, you're buying for more money. And listen, rates have gone up a little bit, but guess what? Rates are probably going to come down. I'm going to talk to our lenders here. He's giving me a look. But eventually, in your lifetime of ownership, they may, and then you can refinance. I'll tell you what is going up. Rental rates are still going up. So as much as interest rates are going up, so are rental rates.
And that's the big one. I think that, you know, it's ironic that we're actually doing a show today, because the last week for mortgage rates have been really trying. It's actually, if you're in our situation, let's just make it clear. You said it right. The interest rates are really good. They're I don't want to say record lows, but they're hovering right around record lows. Typically, record lows are in the threes. We're in the low fours. Interest rates are great. Let's get that out of the way. And I think that interest rates will still be great in 2018, depending on what you consider to be great. However, they're going to go up. And the last week has been pretty rough. Most loan officers that have been quoting clients literally a week ago or at the end of last year, going into 2018, those clients are calling back now just getting a temperature on rates. They've gone up pretty drastically, if you want to, you know, in some cases a half a point on some certain products. So that's a big move over the course of the last week or two. Definitely enough of a move that if you think waiting is a good idea, it's just going to cost you a little bit more money on a monthly payment. So rates are forecasted to go up overall.
So overall 2018, you're expecting rates to go up, or are we seeing the high, or?
I don't think, I think they're going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
I would, from a conservative standpoint, I would bet that they're going up. I wouldn't take my risk saying I'll buy when they hit threes, because you might never see that again. And you're just going to let this keep getting higher and higher as you go. So if you're going to set an unrealistic benchmark saying once they go back into the high threes, that's when I'm going to put a contract on a house, you might never see it. Mm-hmm. And then things just kind of slip away into the abyss where you're never going to get what you really wanted.
So, Nick, you said that your clients are calling you just to kind of know what's going on with the rates. Greco, with respect to locking a rate, what do you advise people, especially if they're locked into a rate? When are they able to lock it, and how does that all work?
Traditionally, I like to lock a loan early on when we have a solid approval from the early stage. You can lock a rate at any moment. Keep that in mind. So
right.
It's not like you have to wait, at a further date. But we want to make sure that we have a legit, clean file that is going to move forward. But ultimately, I don't play the waiting game when it comes to interest rates. I make sure that the client is informed on all options on how they can lock. Typically, a consumer has 3-4 options when it comes to locking an interest rate, whether it be an interest rate that has zero cost on the financing side, or whether it be a discount buy down, where consumer does have the option to buy an interest rate at a much lower product. But the idea of waiting, never wait, because you're going to lose out on the opportunity of locking in a good interest rate for floating out on a difference of an eighth, which we're talking about anywhere between $38 to maybe $50 on a monthly basis, depending on your loan amount. So it's not worth rolling the dice to see where interest rates are going to float out.
What are the additional fees associated with that?
Well, just real quick, in my 23 years, I'm known as a floating loan officer. I advise floating more than anything else, because I like to typically watch the bond market and see where we're going. And if I feel that the direction is good, where rates can slightly improve between now and the time that you close, I will suggest it. You know, meaning, so let's say, for example, the current market 30-year fix might be at 4% this day, and I think that they're going to improve over the next 30 days, I'll advise a client to float, and I'll do it, you know, with confidence, also warning them that anything can still happen. And then maybe we grab a 3.8 or a 3.7 along the way. However, as we sit today, and we're talking today about the outlook of 2018, I'm not advising clients to float this at this particular moment. So that should tell you something. If I'm a known 23-year floater on rates, it's probably not a great idea that I'm telling you that you should be locking if you're probably checking rates right now.
So I love that you call yourself a floater, but somebody who may be a little bit more conservative and wants to know exactly what they're getting, they may want to just lock a rate. What happens if they don't close in a timely manner and they've locked that rate? What are the fees associated with an extension, Greco?
$1 million.
There are fees associated when a rate lock does expire. I mean, it depends how long you have to extend that lock. You know, it could be minimal. It could be a couple $100. It could be a few $1,000s, depending on the loan size. But there are options, so don't freak out if, you know, for some reason, let's say you're buying new construction and the builder's taking a bit longer and that rate does expire. You can always extend that rate, but it's not going to break the bank. So just keep in mind, you can always extend that rate.
Yeah, I think we're more about pinching pennies. Where you should be freaking out is what we said in the beginning of the show. You should be freaking out about the appreciation levels that are going on over the last several years and how these properties keep getting more expensive. So that's where the real loss is. It's not in the $40 difference in interest rate.
Yeah, and it's
in the 7% inflation of the property over year over year.
Well, just market dynamics, right? We're just talking about tight inventories. There's no inventory. And of course, even the slightest of increases in rates is it's making all of us be fearful and saying, is it the right time to buy? And a lot of people are thinking, is it even worth buying? What do you think, Mo? Is the market shifting to a more of a rental society versus an ownership society?
No. And listen, you've been doing this 23 years. You've been a floater for 23 years. So in those 23 years...
I floated Jesus's loan when he refinanced, just so you know.
Historically, the rates are low. People have very short-term memory spans. If you go back into the 2000s and the 90s, these rates were ridiculous. This is historically...
6.875 in 2006, and they call that the boom.
Right.
Yeah. But so, now it's not just the interest rate, Mo. Excuse me for interrupting you. It's also the lack of inventory, right?
Sure, yeah.
There's higher demand. There's not a lot of supply, so obviously prices go up.
I've put in 3 offers in the last 2 weeks. All but one have had a multiple offer situation. On my listings that I've put up, they're all getting to the point where we're going to have multiple offers by this weekend. So I listed a home last year at the same price I listed on Tuesday. Last year, we did not get enough interest, so we rented it. This week, I listed it for the same exact price, and I'll have an offer by Saturday. So there is a lot of people out there searching, and they just don't have the inventory. So like you said, what's going to end up happening is normal supply and demand, those prices are going to keep going up. It's just a normal supply and demand chart.
Yeah, and we have people that watch our show from all over the country, we are here in Chicago. That's where WGN is founded, essentially, but it's, you know, our program reaches from the east to the west, and the reality is the inventory crisis is all over America. It's not just here.
Everywhere.
So if you're listening and you're in New York, I think you know better than anybody else that you have an inventory problem up there, especially in certain parts of New York. California, big inventory problem. Certain parts of Florida, big inventory problem. So, I mean, this is happening to everybody. Boston had two years ago had an open house that they had to call the fire department and police station because the line was 2.5 blocks down the street to see one open house.
They underpriced that thing.
They must have been giving it away.
It's important that we do note that, and that's why you're watching Market Overdrive, because every week we're bringing you information where we have top experts who are in the industry, in the trenches, and understand what is going on, and we're going to give you the secrets of how to transact in this market. One of the things that you mentioned, Mo, is the fact that multiple bidding is real, right? And we're looking at the spring market. Everybody's saying, well, I typically say fourth quarter is always going to be a little quiet, right? Seasonal holidays. But as soon as February hits, everybody everybody's shopping. So don't get too comfortable that you're the only buyer. There's no such thing as a shiny penny right now. Every property is going to meet you with multiple offers. So you need to learn how to negotiate those and align yourself with an expert that does know how to negotiate multiple bids. Mo, I know that you work with a lot of investors, and going back to the fact that people may say, oh, we're not buying right now, but a lot of people are buying multi-unit properties and becoming landlords. What is your take on that investment option?
I think it's smart. You know, it's one of those things where, especially if you are doing it FHA and you can buy a building with 3.5% down, live in one of the units and rent out the other, that's an incredible opportunity to become a real estate investor without putting 25% down or high down payment options. And especially if you're a millennial, let's talk about age. You're somebody who's young, you're 30 years old, you buy a investment building now with 3.5% down, eventually you're going to move out. In 30 years, that thing's paid itself off. So if you've got yourself an incredible opportunity to help your retirement plan by buying a home that you're living in right now. So I love it. I think keep buying. And listen, Super Bowl Sunday, historically, is the start of the spring market. It doesn't feel like spring out here. It's still cold. I froze running over here today.
Yeah,
but
it's cold.
It's real cold. But it's when it begins. We begin the market, the spring market on Monday.
No,
that
thing
always throws me off.
There's that noise.
I'm going racing.
We haven't heard in a long time. It's time for the Nitro Question, which is brought to you by our special sponsor today, Stewart Title. Mo, you're going to get the Nitro Question. Mm. You said something about buying a home for you and your family to live in. However, there's also a very big part of the real estate market are people that make investments. So the Nitro Question is, what is the number one thing most agents forget to do when listing multifamily properties?
Oh, I got it. It's a pet peeve of mine.
You don't have to answer
now. I'm not
going to
answer now, but
park that thing.
Agents, you frustrate me.
But the show is, for the most part, geared towards owner-occupied families moving in, buying their, you know, maybe in some cases their first home, but investments. And some people want to buy their first home as a multi-unit. So we'll come back to you on that question, which again was brought to you by Stewart Title. The Nitro Question was, what's the number one thing agents forget to do when listing multi-properties?
I don't want everybody to get overzealous, especially if you're selling this year and you're thinking, well, my property's going to fly off the market because there is no inventory. You still have to be very strategic about marketing and positioning with your property. I want us to go back and touch a little bit about the demographics. Again, you said that millennials are buying because, you know, lifestyles are changing, right? They're getting married. They're making more money. Of course, it's really hard for you guys to go ahead and save up for an investment. But what can you say to the baby boomer market?
I think they're still buying, too. I think they're buying and selling. And a lot of baby boomers right now are probably getting into that age where they might be empty nesters, or they've been empty nesters for a little bit. They're selling a house. They're moving, and, you know, maybe they're buying a condo. I know my parents did it, you know, so they've moved. And I think we're getting into that market. And I'm seeing it a lot in the North Shore right now. So you're getting a lot of turnover in the North Shore, where it's properties that people have owned for almost a generation now. They're selling it, and then young millennials who are getting to the point where their professions are taken off, they're coming in and they're buying those homes now, renovating them and making them their own. I'm of an age group where a lot of my millennial friends, I mean, I'm kind of almost not a millennial, but most of the millennial clients I have that have kids, they're going and they're buying those baby boomers' homes that are up in the suburbs.
It's the only people that actually fill the order for the millennials is the baby boomers.
Right.
They literally have to. Those are the two biggest demographics. Everybody in the middle can't really supply. Right. So
if you're selling a property, I want you to understand that if it's a two flat or a single family, you're going to be looking or targeting a millennial client because that's the new generation that's going to be buying that product. But then if you're a baby boomer, make sure that you understand how to target this consumer base. If you're a condo owner, especially a high rise, they're OK with high assessments as long as everything is included. Lots of amenities. Walk score has to be high. And when I say walk score, I mean close proximity to restaurants, close proximity to grocery stores, of course, a gym, and walk out to, you know, a workout area or yoga studio. Everything has to be really close. A lot of people worry that millennials are moving to, you know, warmer weather states like Florida. But do understand that a lot of our baby boomers are staying put because they want to be closer to family. So that's a trend a lot of people are ignoring. Make sure that you do understand that when you're selling and targeting a baby boomer audience, that you have to sell the lifestyle, not necessarily, the property itself. But and of course, no one wants to do any work into properties these days. What are you seeing out there? Is that true for baby boomers and millennials as well, Mo?
Yeah, I mean, especially in a home. When you want to get a home that's been a generation-owned home that might be dated, up to, you know, the level of what a millennial wants. It's a lot of money to expend, and it's a lot of time. So what's having to happen is they're having to realize that, listen, I'm not going to get top dollar for a home that needs renovations like that. I'm going to have to discount it a bit, because you have a lot of builders building these homes now that look great. They got the white kitchens, they got the dark floors and the quartz countertops. So if you don't have that, there's going to have to be a discount in play. And, you know, millennials are looking for the new cleaned up look.
I want to fall off the tracks just a little bit, because we've had so many shows in the past where we talk about the mentality of a millennial buyer, and they typically, it seems like everybody wants to just walk in and have everything so turnkey. We forget oftentimes about what you just said, the discounts of buying a home, maybe that is belonged to a baby boomer, and it's a little outdated, they haven't touched the kitchen since they moved in 1970 or whatever. But the cool part about it is being lost. You can go in there and actually make this thing exactly the way you want it. Yeah. Take the discount, do the work. I mean, I'm not a millennial, I guess. I don't know, but
you are I don't think to so. Us. You look like a
I'm totally
he's
great with that. I walk in.
Well,
and I see the kitchen destroyed.
About condition, though,
I see
Nick,
the kitchen destroyed, and I'm trying to make a great bid on the property. I'm like, you're outdated. Your bathrooms are horrible. Your kitchen sucks. And like, I'll do everything to bring the price down. And here I come.
But that's
with
because
my
you're
kitchen.
Not a millennial buyer.
I don't see why they don't do this. This is also being a smart buyer,
right? So then that takes us to our next topic, which is pricing. Right? How do we identify pricing? We understand again, low inventory, rates are going up, and you know, everything's going up pretty much. So how do we strategically price a property in today's market, Mo?
You do a CMA. I say this to everybody. You have to be very realistic. So when your agent comes in, a good agent is going to do a market analysis. They're going to take a look at what's sold in the area, and you have to be realistic. So if your home is not as nice as the home that sold a block away that was gut renovated, you're not getting that gut renovated dollar. So listen to your realtor. If they do a CMA, a market analysis, listen to that. So don't list your home without doing one. Don't listen to Zillow's estimates. They're garbage. Let your realtor do a real market analysis. And list close to what you're hoping to get. You know, in 2009 or 10 or 11, you would list for way above, thinking that somebody's going to come down and offer way below. A smart buyer's agent is doing a CMA as well before they make their offer. So as long as you got a smart realtor, I think you're going to price okay. If you don't have a smart realtor, fire them, hire Carla, and then you got a smart realtor.
And I agree. I want to add to that too, that not just looking at the market and what has sold, but also look at the absorption rate of that area. Just make sure that you understand how long is it going to take that market to absorb your inventory, because that's going to tell you how long you're going to be in the market. If you've surpassed that time frame, that you know you overpriced your property. One of the other things that you mentioned is the list price sales price ratio. You have to understand that, because is that changes dynamics from one neighborhood to the other. So I know a lot of people are going to say, well, why don't we list it at 3% or 6% higher than, you know, what I'm hoping to get. You're leaving money on the table by getting that strategy, because again, there is no inventory. So you're going to get buyers, and they're going to bid up, and they're going to pay what the property is worth. And there's never any leaving of money if you're strategic about the way you price your property.
Yeah, I another trick I use. Remember, people search in round numbers. So if you're going to get close to like 500,000, don't list at 509, because nobody stops their search at 509. They stop at 500. So what you're doing by going to 509 is you're missing all those people that stopped their search at 500. So if you're expecting to get 475, don't try to be cutesy and go to 509,995. This is not a pair of shoes. Go to 500, because some people are stopping their search at 500.
499,999.
That happens. I see it all the time. It sounds cheaper, but you now just missed everybody that started at 500. Well, if you're at 509, you get them. But if you're at 499, you just missed the 500 starters and the 500 enders. And if you're at 509, you just missed that big group of people that stopped their search at 500. They're not seeing your property.
And I love that you're giving away all those secrets, and there's so much information that we can give you, but it's hard to go ahead and summarize that in a one-hour show. I want you to know that you can always email us at info@marketoverdrive.com, and you can reach myself, Mo, Gracco, or Nick if you have further questions. Going back to that message that you were giving earlier, Nick, about, like, you know, what you would do if you buy a property that needs work, you'd be more than happy to fix it. I think that speaks to a whole different consumer base, right? A client that's looking to, I'm working with a buyer right now who's looking at the properties and seeing a single family home that could potentially sell for $500,000 at after repair value for a specific area that they're priced out of. But we're looking at products that may be in the 250, you know. But if you do some sweat equity, add some value to it by fixing some things, you may be able to own a property and be at a 335 price point versus be paying a $500,000 premium for that area that you want to live in.
Look, people need to remember at times that houses are not like cars. Okay, you buy a car, and let's say it was a $50,000 car. You can go ahead and put a bunch of wheels and sound systems and all these little trinkets and customize.
Dubs.
Yeah, you can customize your car all you want. It's not going to bring the value of the car up. Okay, and in fact, the car will go down in value. However, you do expect to buy a car $50,000, turnkey, drive off the lot, and enjoy it, right? Houses are a little different. You could actually buy a house that would normally be worth, whatever, $500,000, but now you're picking it up for $400,000 because it needs a lot of work. But maybe that work only cost you $60,000. But now this house is done so nice that it's not necessarily worth $500,000 anymore. It's worth $520,000, $530,000. See the difference in the dynamics here? How you could actually, if you have a good plan and a good crew, or just know some good, you know, even friends and family that know how to do this relatively cheap, and you're doing a good job of picking out the essentials where the house is still marketable. I mean, you're not putting in lime green tile all over the place, but you do a good job. You can actually see the house go above and beyond the projected value for a little bit more because it might be the best house in the neighborhood now. Now, don't go putting gold plated everything because that's going to be...
You're looking at the Persian now you're while you're saying
now
that.
Now you're going back to the car problem.
He's looking at himself, right?
But, you know, the reality is that it's something where if you put a little TLC in there, not only would you get the market value, but you'll get it your way, and you might go above the market value a little bit.
I did it in my house. So I bought a house that was built in 1979, and I've just gut renovated it. But I've made it my own. I plan on staying there forever. I'm never going to move again unless I win the lottery. If I win the lottery, I'll move. Otherwise, I'm stuck. Moving again. But I did all the work, and there's going to be a future value add. And I think Nick hit something on the head. And I'm a car guy, and it kind of resonated.
Yeah,
I never
heard
it that
way. That's why I said that.
When you buy a car and you do all the work, you enjoy it, but the value goes down.
Yep.
Now you're buying a house, you're doing the work, the value goes up, and guess what? You're enjoying it for 5, 7, 10 years, 20 years, maybe a lifetime. So,
and not worrying about when something's going to really break, like on your car.
Right. And nobody owns a car for 5, 7, 10 years. I don't.
Have you met Carla? She's got like a 1987 Nissan roller skate.
Side note.
We got to get her in
frugal,
your car.
Frugal person, which makes her a good realtor, I guess, because she's frugal.
She's reinvesting in her business.
Frugal. I'm reinvesting, whatever.
When we get off there, I'm
just
going to call you cheap.
I love the fact that you talked about...
Sorry.
So there is a difference between overimproving a property, but remember, you can never overimprove a rental property, right? You're going to live in it. You're never going to... built equity in it. In a home, you're able to use it for the purpose of, you know, being your home. But you can build up equity. Graco, what are some of the things that a family can do to a property that it's not going to be considered over-improving? I mean, you've done renovations before and you flip properties. You're a 10-year investor. What do you advise that people do that are just small little changes that are going to add value to the property but are not going to be considered as over-improvements?
The most important are going to be the kitchen and the bathrooms. Those are the easiest to do. Right?
Most important.
Those are the most important. Paint's always going to help. That's very inexpensive. So make sure you do that. But to touch on what Mo said, the average consumer, the average home buyer doesn't understand what it is to take the ugly duckling and put some sweat equity into it. We do because we're professionals in the industry. We live this, we breathe this every day. We understand what it takes to buy something at a discount, put a little money into it, and then reap the benefits later. The problem is that the average consumer doesn't. So it's us professionals, we have to educate these consumers a bit more to get them to understand why it's actually more important to purchase something a lot cheaper than, you know, spending that heavy check on that $500,000 home. And I think this falls back on you guys as agents. You know, you guys have to educate consumers more on this because you're leaving a lot of opportunity on the table by not going after the ugly duckling home, so to speak.
I think that's something great to bring up because I'm reading here, according to Zillow, housing inventory declined 10.5% in the last 12 months ending in November. So that's important, right? Mo, what happens when you're shopping with a client and you cannot find any inventory? What do you advise? What are some of the secrets that of the trade or how you run your business as to how do you find a product for your clients?
It depends. So if they have a lease expiring and we can't find anything, we got to figure out how to change our demands a little bit. Or actually, guys, in the city of Chicago, if you re-sign your lease, your landlord cannot unreasonably withhold you from subleasing. So I tell people, if you don't find anything and you don't want to be homeless, re-sign that lease and then find a subtenant. But what I'll do typically is I'll start reaching out to agents I know. Hey, listen, do you have anything coming up that's like this? I know Carla's a part of it. I'm a part of it. The Top Agent Network. There's a lot of private listing networks. So you got to start shaking the tree, seeing if you can figure something out for your client. So I'll shake the tree a bit. But I tell people, don't rush into buying a house either. Be patient. If you have the time frame, be patient. We'll find you the right home. The inventory's low, but homes are out there. They're hitting the market. And I'm telling people, if you're sitting out there right now and you can't find the home for yourself, Monday will start a very heavy listing time going forward into spring, because that spring market's going to start come Monday. And I feel like some sellers are going to start hitting the market because property values have gone up. So those people who have a ton of equity, they're like, shoot, let's cash in now. Mm-hmm. It might be a good time to cash in. So I think we're going to get a little more inventory
if
this spring.
If you're a seller and you've been on a fence and you've been, you know, brushing off the idea of listing it, I think at some point you're still doing a little bit of an, you know, temperature check on the market. And if you're watching the news over the last couple weeks, you might want to look at the fact that rates are going up. Mm-hmm. And that might be scary for you as a seller. You might want to still be able to grab a bigger buyer pool while it's still available. Because I can honestly tell you that if rates did jump up to 6,
ouch,
that's going to depress the value a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's people just can't afford it.
Right.
You know, there's going to be some affordability issues in the, especially in that $300,000 to $400,000 range where like every penny counts.
Yeah, and that takes us back to pricing, right? We have to understand, and of course, like who is the target audience, who is buying properties, and that's why we chose these key topics, because that's how it's going to, this is how your market is going to be affected, right? Pricing, who is the market, who's buying? When you're looking at pricing, you just touch on something that's very important. If you're looking in that category of anything under $300,000, well, that's your millennial buyer. If you're going to be selling something above that price point, anything $400,000, it's going to be sometimes your baby boomers, right? So they're going to transact a little bit different. So you have to understand the difference between these demographics. What we're doing here is with educating you through the process so that you're more knowledgeable when you either decide to buy. And of course, when you're a buyer, you understand what these sellers are thinking when they're pricing their property and how to negotiate it. Mo, I love the fact that you said that you mentioned Top Agent Network, and I think that it's imperative, right? Because there are a lot of rookie agents that are hitting the market. It's imperative people align themselves with tenure realtors. They have a network because we're able to collaborate. I mean, I just had Ryan Smith. Thank you. Kudos. And I'm doing a shout out to you because I really appreciate what you're doing for me and my client by giving me access to properties before they even hit the market. Right. And of course, I reached out to Scott Newman. Can't stand you. He knows I love him. But, you know, we work all the time and it's easier for us to be able to help facilitate inventory for our clients. Those are some of the things that you should be looking for when hiring a realtor, because right now it's really hard to find inventory.
Get friendly with your realtors that have more experience. I get agents reaching out to me all the time.
I'm not about getting friendly, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, like, be friends with everybody. I'll go back to, like, you know, you guys said I was the president of the YPN. One of our biggest missions is to get realtors around one another so they get comfortable, they know each other, and they work cohesively together to make this an easier industry for all of us. And yeah, hey, I see Ryan Smith is watching. What's up, Ryan Smith?
Ryan,
we all love Smith REO.
Hey, Ryan, thank you so much. I heart you. I really, really do appreciate what you're doing.
He's the man.
Let's get more on that nitro question.
We got to come back to that, man. The nitro question was, what's the number one thing most agents forget to do when listing multifamily properties? What you got for us, Mo? Nitro question answerer.
Not breaking down the expenses properly. Listen, when you're putting your stuff in there and you have the rental amounts, taxes are easy to find. Mm-hmm. Put in all of the expenses. Put in the insurance cost. Put in the cost of utilities if your landlord is paying it. So whoever's buying it can get a realistic idea of whether or not the net operating income is correct. Don't get lazy when you're putting your listings in there and not list the actual expenses. It drives me insane.
Oh. I love it. So you're advising to do a net sheet so that sellers understand exactly. One of the other things that I think it's imperative to, Mo, is pulling title and understanding the zoning of each property. I had a client who actually I negotiated on behalf of a client and I bought a property and we were buying a 3-flat. It was actually turned out to be a 4-flat. So, of course, we got it for a really good deal because the selling listing agent didn't understand that it was a 4-flat. So always pull zoning. And I know that, Graco, in the past, you and I have had deals where it was so difficult for us to get financing without understanding the intricacies of the actual zoning, correct?
Yep. You got to make sure that zoning's early on. Your attorney,
that drives
somebody does that due diligence,
that drives
or your agent.
Nuts.
assure that that property legitimately is a multi-unit.
Mm-hmm. You got to order a zoning cert. Sometimes it takes a while, but what really stinks sometimes is attorneys will wait till the 11th hour to order that, and you guys are getting ready to close, and what was supposed to be a 3-unit comes back legally zoned as a 2-unit, and then for lending purposes, now you guys are totally mm-hmm. goofed up, and the deal dies.
Super easy, though. You can always call the building department here in the city. Real quick, they'll tell you over the phone what it's zoned at, so... I know it takes a while to get the zoning.
You must have a charming voice or something. I call them.
It's Greco.
Like,
yeah. He knows everybody.
They're like, hello.
He knows somebody.
What you want?
Greco, why don't we move into the news?
Yeah, we're running out of time here, guys. So, again, homeowners, if you are looking to sell your home in 2018, it's very important that you do so. My five top reasons why. Number one, rates are going up historically. They're pretty low right now. So the idea is, or they're gauging that the rates are going to hit 5% by the end of 2018. So take advantage of low interest rates. Number two, inventory still remains tight. Demand is high. We all know that there's more buyers on the sidelines right now than there actually are homes to sell. So that's something to consider. Number three, prices are going to continue to increase. We're seeing 3-5% right now in our market annually. So it's better to purchase a home today at a cheaper price. Number four, people have more money in their pocket. What that means is unemployment rates are down. The stock market is doing great. All the markets are actually doing great.
Except cryptocurrency. I'm getting killed.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll bounce back. And number five, millennials will be ready to commit this calendar year. 43% of the home buyers in 2018 are predicted to be millennials. So you realtors out there, professionals, make sure you cater to this market because they're going to be a big part of our buyers in the industry today. So
you forgot
Mo,
six.
You're going to tell me what coin you're actually buying.
Let's just keep you don't want to buy what I bought.
We're good with real estate. We can advise that. But
we're
going to
have another show.
Anybody here should be doing anything about crypto? Nothing.
That's no, stay
show.
Away from
well,
it.
As we're wrapping up our show, I do want to go around the round table and last go ahead and answer this question. I want each and every one of you answer. You have 5 minutes or less.
Two minutes.
With, again, record low inventory, what is your biggest advice for an investor? What is the... the most, I guess, lucrative investment that you'd recommend this year, Mo?
2-4-unit multifamily buildings. You can get residential financing on them. And over the long period of time, listen, if rates go up, property values come down, as long as you have good tenants in there, you can wait out a bad market. Every market that goes down must come back up again. So 2-4-unit multifamilies are my favorite. That's what I would say. Bye.
And I think we can all echo that and say that's true. But can you give us another advice just so that we can look, you know, look at it from
that would be my number one go-to, 2-4 units. But any property today, if you buy it right and you're able to rent it out at a good price, you're going to yield a good return regardless. So the idea is just to make sure you buy that property right and invest.
Nick?
Oh, man.
There aren't too many left.
There's nothing. I mean, I would, you know, when somebody takes... The main answer is really hard to kind of give another one to it, but I think I'm going to stick with what I, you know, 2-4 units is the way to go. If you're doing an investment, it's an investment. But I, you know, all of it, even when you're buying a home, I want to give somebody the advice that, you know, when we talked earlier about houses need to be already ready and turnkey and I don't want to do the work and all that stuff, you need to also remember this is an investment, even as a homeowner. Yeah, you're going to move your family in there, but you need to just make sure that if you have an opportunity to create that and make it a better investment by putting in some elbow grease, that might be the best way to actually make money in the market.
And I'm going to speak to the clients who are actually families that are going to be using the property and they're going to be owner-occupants. I want to advise, you know, because I've done renovations and I know what it's like to flip and rehab properties and get a higher appraised value after property's fixed, I want to invite you, encourage you with what Nick said. If you're buying property, look into those distressed homes. Go ahead and compete with the investors who are paying cash for those homes, but just understand that it's not that difficult to paint a, you know, a house, change the kitchen, and modify that bathroom, and it's going to allow you to be in the neighborhoods that you want to live in, the zip codes that you want to be in, and the schools that you want to send your children. And so don't look the other way when you see something that needs work. I guess that's my advice. You guys are going with multi-units. I'm going with single family. And of course, real estate is an appreciating asset. So over time, everything appreciates is way better than renting, despite the rates and the lack of inventory.
And speaking of appreciation, we need to start thanking everybody that sponsored the show today. We're going to start with Elizabeth Fuzino of Allstate, Denise Edenhofer, and I hope I said that right, with Fidelity National Home Warranty, Joanna Diaz with Credit RX, Mike Randick and Carmen Carbonara of Stewart Title, Tamika Scott with Money Matters Financial, and last but not least, most importantly, Main Street Realty Group.
Woo!
The man himself, Mo
YPN
Dutcha.
YPN president.
YPN, I don't even have enough time Jack to give all your accolades. And Mo Dutcha of Main Street and, of course, the Dutcha Law Group. Thanks again for all being big sponsors of the show.
You're welcome.
Love it. It's a wrap. Look at that.
We're not wrapped up yet.
2018, February 1st. We did it.
Our website is brand new and fresh. www.marketoverdrive.com.
Check out the website.
It is still having its kinks worked out, but it looks different. That's for damn sure.
Just like your hair.
Yeah.
She got that in.
Carla made a funny.
I had to laugh at the end. Nor laughing on the show anymore, Carla.
She dropped the mic that she can't actually drop.
She dropped it. She couldn't even reach it. So that's a whole other story.
I could totally reach it.
You could also go to our YouTube channel and get all of our shows. You can, last but not least, subscribe to the WGN podcast where you'll see the show on WGN.
Nick's
Facebook
so
/ Market Overdrive. God, I am so tired of everybody here. This show is over with. We'll see you next Thursday at 5:30 p.m. Peace.